Hello there, this is Mark Bauerlein for another conversation. Today we have Professor Salvatore Babones. He is Professor of Sociology at the University of Sydney in Australia, and he's the author of what I think is an important new book that gets to really maybe the pressing political question of our time. It is called The New Authoritarianism, Trump, Populism, and the Tyranny of Experts. Welcome, Professor Babones.
Thank you, Mark, and please call me Salvatore.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and jump right into the title. What is, quote, the new authoritarianism?
Oh, the new authoritarianism is the replacement to the old authoritarianism. You know, the word authoritarianism was actually originally coined by American spiritualists in the 1870s. Who were upset about authoritarian religions, the religions of the book and religions of the pulpit, and they wanted people to reach out for their own personal religious experiences.
I think that is a fact that very, very few people should know, but ought to know.
They should know it. And what's really funny is it was next taken up by American anarchists who complained about authoritarian governments who wanted to close down the saloons and the brothels in Missouri.
Interesting. So spiritualists and anarchists.
And then it got applied, once it entered the political sphere, it got applied, first of all, to the Salazar fascist regime in Portugal and to Franco's Spain. And the old authoritarians are people like, you know, Salazar and Franco, who told people what to think based on the authority of the church, the military, the security services, in country after country, you can look for authoritarians, and they always depend on the authority of somebody saying, don't think for yourself, let us think for you.
And it reaches into, well, it reaches beyond behavior. We're trying to go all the way into people's mind.
Exactly. I mean, if you think of who are the old authoritarians, the old style authoritarians today, look no further than Erdogan in Turkey, who rules on the authority of the imams and the authority of the security services. Look at Vladimir Putin in Russia, who rules again on the authority of the security services. He himself comes from the security services and who has overseen a revival of the Russian Orthodox Church, even though no one would accuse Putin of being a very religious man. Nonetheless, he sought the authority of the church behind his regime. Well, people like Erdogan and Putin have nothing in common with Donald Trump. Like, I'm sorry. You know, there may be theories about connections between them, but, you know, Donald Trump is the least authoritarian person imaginable in the sense that the only authority Donald Trump seems to respect is himself. Right? And Donald Trump is not telling you, vote for me because the churches support me, vote for me because the army supports me, vote for me because the CIA supports me. None of them support him. You know, Donald Trump is an ultimate American anti-authoritarian.
That's another interesting point. All of the old sources of the old authoritarianism, that they didn't want Trump. Corporate America didn't want him. The intelligence community didn't want. I guess maybe the rank and file soldiers and police officers.
Well, but they aren't the authorities.
Right.
You know, the people in authority, as critics of Trump like to say, the adults in the political parties in America were to a person anti-Trump, never Trumpers. The new authoritarians are those people who are now telling us who to think and how we have to think. And those are not politicians like Donald Trump. Those are the experts who have set themselves up as a self-appointed class to tell us how to think, how to think on climate change, how to think on economic policy, how to think on every domain after domain of public life, how to think about education. The experts are now in charge.
Well, be more specific. Who are experts? Who would fall into the category of experts? Would college professors be
sure,
experts?
Sure. People like us. People like us. Hopefully not us. But
in the media commentators.
People like us. Well, let me give you a great example. If you go back, 100 years in America, education was run by local school boards. And local school boards, democratically elected local school boards, even decided the curriculum. You know, if a local school board wanted to teach creation in school and didn't approve of evolution, that's what the people got. Today, of course, we have an emerging national curriculum, the Common Core. And the Common Core is not amenable to political influence. It is actually set up by educationalists, by education professors, by people who've made careers in the school system, by people who have doctorates in education. Now, the Common Core may be a perfectly good curriculum. I'm not going to argue that today. But it's not a very democratic curriculum. It is a very authoritarian curriculum. It's one where a class of people have said, this is how you must think. And that same phenomenon has taken over domain after domain of public life. It used to be that monetary policy was in the hands of the elected government. Now monetary policy is in the hands of an independent central bank. It used to be that our criminal justice system was largely run by jurors. You know, jurors decided who was innocent and who was guilty. Well, today we still have a semblance of jury trials. But in reality, it's the lawyers and the judges who decide everything, not the juries. In domain after domain of public life, we've moved away from participatory democracy, where voters actually are engaged in deciding what they want from life, into a system where experts make decisions that, let me be clear, often are very good decisions. But nonetheless, they're not the people's decisions. And, you know, when we have a conflict between democracy and authority, well, I'm on the side of democracy, even if authority often is the one that's right.
So Donald Trump then is an anti-authoritarian.
I think he is absolutely one of the most anti-authoritarian personalities in American history. He reminds me of nobody so much as, say, Andrew Jackson. And, you know, Andrew Jackson is a personal hero of mine. Yes, he was a slave owner. Yes, he was a nasty person by all accounts. But nonetheless, he was certainly anti-authoritarian. He was the one who stood up against the authorities of his own day and said, let the people rule, invited the people into the White House, famously, on his inauguration day.
And so we hear so much as the opposite, that Trump is authoritarian. That comes from the experts to a great extent, but many of the people who would define themselves as liberals or leftists who would vote solidly Democratic, they believe it, correct?
Oh, absolutely, they believe it because they don't know what authoritarianism is or where it started. I mean, look, when Donald Trump gave his speech, his inauguration address on January 20th, 2017, I actually heard it on January 21st. I was in Australia. You know, I'm American, mm-hmm, but I mm-hmm. teach at the University of Sydney. And I heard that speech and, you know, I heard all of the experts talking about Hitler's Nuremberg address and the rise of authoritarianism in America. And I thought, no, I've heard this speech before. This was William Jennings Bryan's speech in 1896. William Jennings Bryan was the progressive Democrat who led the Silver Crusade, the fight for the free coinage of silver to fight the deflation of the 1890s. And, you know, William Jennings Bryan was a progressive hero in the 19th century, hero of the people, the great commoner, as he was called. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what did William Jennings Bryan say in his famous speech accepting the Democratic nomination in 1896, the Cross of Gold speech, as it's called? He said that America should be run by and for Americans. America should be free of foreign influence. You know, the people should come first. The important thing was to raise the wages of ordinary Americans, not to ensure the profits of bankers. You know, all the sorts of things that Trump said. Of course, our political memory is so short that even though the Cross of Gold speech is, you know, if you Google most famous speech in American political history, it'll tell you Cross of Gold speech, but who's read it lately? But when I heard Trump, I heard William Jennings Bryan. I heard the Progressive Crusade. And of course, William Jennings Bryan was not only the Democratic candidate, he was the candidate of the Progressive Party. The Populist Party, the original
Populist Party, right?
He was a progressive.
Farmers Alliance and all that. And it's interesting that even in, you know, 1890s populism, they actually targeted the experts in a way.
Absolutely.
Because Wall Street and politicians, Those were, you know, it was sort of the first version of flyover country, right? Except it was all just East Coast. There wasn't West Coast, but you had East Coast, and they weren't flying quite yet.
It was steamover country, and it was the country that the trains bypassed on their way from New York to San Francisco. And William Jennings Bryan came from Nebraska, out of the Great Plains. He was only a one-term congressman, and yet his rhetoric captured the convention and catapulted him to the nomination. Now, he lost to William McKinley, the gold standard traditionalist, won the day in that election.
Well, what I would say is, look, Bryan ran three or four times, correct? Three times.
Three times. For 1896, president. 1900, and 1908.
Now, he lost all times. How in the world did Donald Trump win in 2016 with so many forces allied against him?
The elections are very similar to the kind of alliances that Bryan fought against. And the fact is, Donald Trump squeaked by. I mean, he squeaked by 8,000 votes in one county in Michigan. It was that. It was that.
And Bryan wasn't lucky to have an adversary who was profoundly unappealing to so many people.
Well, Bryan didn't have the internet. And I think that's really, right. He had no way to reach out. Bryan was doing his whistle stop tours of small towns while McKinley was supported by all the major newspapers in the country. It really is almost a Republican-Democrat switch, 1896 and 2016. The two elections are very similar.
Well, so let me ask you, when you said you heard the inauguration, you heard all the experts denouncing it as here's Nuremberg once again, my question is, do the experts look at Donald Trump and that phenomenon and genuinely see Nuremberg, or is there some cynicism in this? Is there some
talisman? It's a magical weapon you can wield against anyone you don't like. You compare him to a Nazi. To some degree that's true, but I think the fear is real. Oh, I had many colleagues. My colleagues in the social sciences, and I'm sure your colleagues in the humanities in the United States, were genuinely afraid of a Trump presidency. I had a colleague who was organizing a neighborhood self-defense group in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, because he was convinced that white mobs were going to riot through Pittsburgh, killing and burning the houses of his black neighbors. Of course, the only election-related violence nationwide, as far as I know, was actually a group of black teenagers in Chicago who assaulted a disabled white teenager. There were no mobs running through the streets in 2017, or through to today.
Well, I heard a lot of this rhetoric myself. I heard about the restoration of white supremacy, and I wrote a book about white supremacy as it existed in the South 100 years ago, and I just had to listen to them, look at them, and say, "What reality are you talking about here? I can't tie your remarks to anything I'm seeing or actually hearing." But from what I could tell, they genuinely were, yes, afraid.
Oh, they were genuinely afraid, and I think that was because they've conditioned themselves to, see these. Well, I think they're not used to seeing their authority challenged. It's something that is just very confronting when someone actually says the emperor has no clothes. I mean, for example, I think Donald Trump's foreign policy has been actually very effective. And in Europe, he went to the NATO meeting and said, all of you are not contributing enough to NATO. Give us some more, put up or shut up. If you believe in collective defense, start spending money in favor of it. Now, experts like me, and this is my own area, experts like me who write on security have been writing for years about how European countries are not contributing enough to their own defense. But to actually say that at a NATO meeting broke all the norms. Right? And what Trump has done is he's put truths, simple homespun truths, in people's faces, like the border wall. Will a wall keep out more illegal immigrants? Well, of course a wall will help keep out illegal immigrants. Yes, a few will still get around a wall. A wall may not be the most economically effective way to do it. We could think of maybe better ways to keep out illegal immigrants. But the simple homespun truth that if you build a 20-foot-high wall, fewer people will enter the country illegally, that resonates with people, right? And it's something that you're not allowed to say, and he is saying it. And that's what has made him popular. And one of the things that I personally admire about Donald Trump is that when he became president, he kept his phone and he kept his Twitter account. Now, remember, in 2008, Barack Obama lamented that he had to give up his BlackBerry. And yet he did it. Right. He turned it in, you know, like you have to turn in your badge because you've been relieved of duty. And well, he turned in his phone. I love the fact that Donald Trump kept his phone. And of course, he doesn't tweet in a presidential manner. He tweets like a grumpy grandpa. And of course, what he is a grumpy grandpa. And I think a lot of people think it's endearing that a grumpy grandpa is the leader of the free world. But a lot of experts think it's very scary that a grumpy grandpa is the leader of the free world.
Well, this is really the sign that the experts have lost their authority with at least enough people to elect Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump, he floated campaigns before, presidential campaigns before, and they didn't click.
Right.
And this time, I think it was the old establishment had simply lost the trust of enough people, or even had provoked enough anger in the people at presumed feeling the condescension that they felt from the experts, or the idea that the experts have now formed a class among themselves and they're really out for their own interests.
All right, and not only their own interests, they simply are out for their own power, their own authority. Take an issue like global warming. Global warming is a big issue. A lot of people care very deeply about the environment and really want action on this issue. Well, it's not in the interests of the expert class, not particularly in the interests of the expert class, to promote the agenda of global warming being a threat. But it's something they sincerely believe. It is something that on their own authority they want to push on other people, and they resent it when people challenge them. Now, even if they have no particular economic gain as individuals to having the country pursue a climate change agenda, still, no one likes to have their authority questioned. I teach in a classroom, and my salary is the same whether or not a student challenges my authority, but it's always a bit confronting if someone challenges my authority, and experts have not had their authority challenged for decades. We had an era, a new era of good feelings. You remember the old era of good feelings was from the 1800s through the election of Andrew Jackson, 1800 through 1830 or so, when there was no real political opposition. We had the same thing from roughly the end of World War II until the early 2010s, an era when no matter who you elected, you got pretty much the same policies. I mean, people think it's a good thing when Democrats and Republicans reach across the aisle and work together to give us sensible policies that work for all Americans. I mean, that sounds very heartwarming. When I hear that, I think, so you're telling me it doesn't matter who I vote for. They're just going to make a deal behind my back and have a consensus across parties to do what they think is best. Now, there are two ways of looking at that. I personally don't want my politicians to come to a consensus. I want Republicans to be Republicans and Democrats to be Democrats. And that way I have a clear choice. I mean, if Bernie Sanders had been the Democratic nominee in 2016, American voters would have had an absolutely clear choice. Do they want higher taxes and health care for all, Medicare for all, Bernie Sanders? Or do they want lower taxes and privatized medicine, Donald Trump? And people would have known what to vote for. Now, I'm not going to tell people what to vote for. I have my own views on that. But people would have at least had a clear choice between two agendas. Instead, we've had in most of the elections since the era of, the nightly news and mass television has been, a consensus across parties. And I'm glad that that's broken down. And I'm glad that Donald Trump has, really put the nails in the coffin of the cross-party consensus. Just look at the 2018 election. A greater percentage of Americans voted in that midterm election, 2018, than ever before in any midterm election ever recorded in United States history. I don't mean more people. I mean a greater percentage of the population voted. The biggest turnout ever in a midterm election. Well, I think that's good for democracy.
Yeah. Well, it probably suggests that more people feel they have a stake, and that a vote is meaningful. Even if you don't feel my individual vote is not going to change any outcome, it has a meaning. It has meaning that it doesn't have when you feel like everything's up to the experts.
Well, if you can vote for the crop of new, you know, very progressive Democrats who came out in the 2018 out of the 2018 primaries and were in the on the Democratic slate for the House, or you can vote for a Trump Republican, you know, you have a choice.
Yeah, there's a real choice. And actually, what I would say is, given the outcome with the Democrats taking the House,
right,
and there being more women and more people of color elected there, I would say to my colleagues who talked about Donald Trump signals the new white supremacy or the new male sexism. Well, he's not doing a very good job.
Look, Donald Trump, I think he's been cathartic for the American political system. And personally, I'm a big fan of populism. I think anyone who says that, you know, populism is dangerous simply hasn't read the history. Populism has been the great purgative that brings us advances in American history.
This is the title of one of your chapters. I was going to ask you, what is the populist purgative?
Oh, the populist purgative, the flood that washes away the sins of the expert class. The populist purgative is when people actually come out and force government to change. I mean, the last populist wave we had in the 1890s brought us the direct election of senators. It brought us the income tax. Now, you may not like the income tax, but, you know, before the income tax, it was very difficult to govern the country, you know, only using tariffs as the only source of tax revenue. It got us the income tax, direct election of senators. It got us prohibition, which, you know, love it or hate it, it was a major change in American society demanded by a lot of people, the prohibition of alcohol. It almost got us the direct election of the Supreme Court, which I personally strongly advocate. This populist wave got this, despite the fact that Bryan never won an election, but people had to stand up and take notice of what the people wanted. Now, you may have heard of the historian Richard Hofstadter. Richard Hofstadter was in the news constantly, long gone, but Richard Hofstadter was in the news constantly with the 2016 election for his famous essay on the paranoid style in politics. It was a 1964 essay in which he ridiculed populists and Barry Goldwater being his target in 1964, but also the 1890s populists for their paranoia of thinking that, you know, foreigners and bankers, you know, are all taking control of the country. And, you know, I think the answer is that in the 1890s, foreigners and bankers were taking control of the country. And, you know, populists stood up and said, we want our country back. And, mm-hmm. you know, the resonances between that 1896 election and 2016 are just amazing. I encourage everyone to go back and read the Cross of Gold speech. You can get it easily on the internet. But the interesting thing is Hofstadter, although he excoriates the 1890s populists, he never mentioned William Jennings Bryan by name. And the reason is that William Jennings Bryan, 100 years later, was still a Democratic progressive icon. You know, he was the great commoner. He was the soul of the Democratic Party. You could criticize all the other populists, but, you know, better not criticize William Jennings Bryan. William Jennings Bryan, of course, then went on. Is his final act in politics. And, you know, if you haven't made the connection yet, you're going to love this, especially, you know, given the character of this podcast. William Jennings Bryan was a lawyer for the prosecution in the Scopes, quote unquote, monkey trial.
Right.
Tennessee versus Scopes, about the teaching of evolution. And William Jennings Bryan, once again, was on the side of the people. Now, that may have been the wrong side. I mean, if you ask me,
The other side was Clarence Darrow.
Clarence Darrow and the American Civil Liberties Union. And there you had a classic confrontation between populists and experts. The experts, that is the biology teacher Clarence Darrow, the American Civil Liberties Union, the lawyers, right, were saying right. that, you know, you have to teach evolution in school. That's real biology. And frankly, if I had kids in a school district, I would want them learning evolution in their biology classes. I think they were right on the issue, but they were wrong on the democracy, because the people of Tennessee did not want the teaching of evolution. And William Jennings Bryan went to bat for the people of Tennessee and won the case, by the way.
the stage play made out of it, Inherit the Wind, and then the film version with Frederick March playing Bryan really made Bryan out to be a fool, which I know historically was certainly not the case.
Well, but this again is the intellectuals and the expert class making fun of populists, making fun of Democrats, little d Democrats, you know, making fun of people who stand up for the little person. Look, I mean, if we go back to Donald Trump and the grumpy grandpa analogy, you know, Donald Trump's language is not the language of a seasoned politician with a degree from, you know, Harvard Law School who carefully watches all of his words. Trump's language is the language of an ordinary person. Now, I know a lot of people get really shocked at what Donald Trump writes in those tweets, but I guarantee you, if you look at Twitter, lots of ordinary people use the same kind of language and a lot worse. The president of the United States should have higher standards in his language than an ordinary person. But on the other hand, I recognize that, you know, the appeal of this man is that he's not a professional politician. He's an everyman elected president. And frankly, if we worry about things like who's going to start a war or who's going to start a nuclear war, you know, these worries from 2 years ago that Trump was going to go on a military spree invading countries. Well, you know what? Grumpy Grandpa has enough sense to get America out of Syria. He has enough sense to say, look, it's time to get out of Afghanistan. We've been there for, you know, 20 years.
The experts don't have a great historical record on this issue, do they?
The experts have a terrible record of being quite invady and wanting to use the military all the time. And, you know, to have someone with the good sense to just say, wait a minute, why are Americans dying in Syria? Even if that person, you know, the unfortunate flip side of that is, you know, having a good sense ordinary person in command also is someone who, doesn't watch his language on Twitter. Now, again, I want to be clear. I'm not endorsing Donald Trump's language, but I'm saying, you know, you don't always have to have the smartest person and the most careful person is not always the right person for the job. I mean, let me put it this way. You know, Mother Teresa may have been a wonderful woman, but she wouldn't have made a very good Marine. The kind of person you want for a Marine is different. And I think in the same way, you know, the kind of person who can get things done for the American people, and I go back again to my own personal hero, Andrew Jackson, is very different from the kind of person that, you know, you want maybe, you know, running your Catholic school, you know. And fair enough, you take the good with the bad.
Let's stop on that note, Professor Bobonas. The book is The New Authoritarianism, Trump, Populism, and the Tyranny of Experts. It's out with Polity Press, and I encourage everyone to go check this book out. Thank you, Professor Bobonas.
Thank you, Professor Bauerlein.